Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about how flaxseed oil soothes carpal tunnel syndrome from Tulane University. Then eating more cereals. Now, when I mention cereals, I'm mentioning whole grain cereals, not refined sugared cereals. But according to this latest study, you could live a longer life. A whole dozen. Hold on a second. That is in contradiction to that best-selling book of about a year or two ago that says that you have to have no cereals. Well, you do, and I'll explain that. Also, from Brigham and Women's Hospital up in Boston, the more nuts you eat, the lower your risk of cardiovascular disease and death from that. Also today, we're going to take a look at how the AARP, and many of you who are over, let's say, over 50, and who are members of the AARP, according to Nick Sergi and Calvin Sloan, we just found out that the Center for Media and Democracy says the AARP is funding ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. Wow, didn't know about that. That's important because I certainly wouldn't want them doing anything on behest of ALEC that impacted me or anyone else. Also, exercise may be the simple solution for rescuing seniors lost and injured muscles from McMaster's University. Lots on health and healing. Then when it comes time for the environment, wow. Boy, it's all coming out this week. First from Bloomberg, forget tornadoes. Rain bombs are coming for your town. What does that mean? It means rain as you've never seen it before. Killer rains. Oh yeah, they've been killing a lot of people in the last 5 days, including a once-in-a-thousand-year rain. I'll explain that. Also today from our audio files, we're going to show you about human extinction. Now, I remember it was 8 years ago when I began to work on a major new book, the follow-up to Clearer, Cleaner, Safer, Greener, a blueprint for new environment, which was one of the books that began Earth Day. And I wanted something that would explain the environment today. What I didn't anticipate was how much of what I was writing about 8 years ago is now old material, and also doing a documentary on it. And I talked about the tipping points, that if we had these tipping points tip, it would forever, in all of our lifetimes, it would change the outcome of how we live, where we live, food we grow. And yet no one paid attention. And then when I had some people on the program talking about how bad is the environment right now, and they would say, it is literally catastrophic. And again, people say, isn't that extreme? No, it's not. We'll bring you up to date on human extinction by, ready for this? 14 years from now. 14 years from now, we start going beyond the tipping point. For those of you who believe that Clintons were good for the economy, they weren't, unless you were very rich. I'm going to share from Global Research, the Clinton economy is the Walmart economy. For example, for all of you union members, and I support unions, I do not support corrupt leaders of unions who have used and abused their membership and mandates. But what if I were able to show you and prove that Hillary and Bill Clinton are two rabid anti-unionists? So why would you support her? You want the proof? Today you get it. And why would any person of color ever support the Clintons? Last evening, one of Bill Clinton's longest and most intimate confidants, a woman who herself is a scholar lawyer and one of the most outstanding lawyers in the state of Texas, she was in college at either age 15 or 16. She's very bright. As she said that Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton are rabid racists, and she gave examples of what he would say in her presence about blacks and how he had an illegitimate child with a black woman and then sent her off to Australia. All kinds of things we learned. I didn't ask, nor did I care about anything salacious in his personal life. That's his business. But what he really thinks and does and then lies to it in public, that's different. I wanted to know who are the real Clintons, since you would have seen him without the spin meisters, without the photoshopping of what they say. Show us the truth. And that happened. You ought to download that. So I'm going to talk about just one aspect of Bill Clinton's racist background, and Hillary also. And once you hear this, you're asked, why would anyone vote for him? And also today, from Professor Lawrence Whitner from Global Research, we're about to spend over $1 trillion on a whole new nuclear weapon program from a president who in part got elected because he was anti-nuclear. What could you do with $1 trillion to help Americans? A lot. I'll share that with you. And also, how is it that Israel now is demanding $5 billion a year in arms? And what would $5 billion do if we didn't give it to Israel and to continue its apartheid program against the Palestinians? What if we put $5 billion into the American economy? What will $5 billion get you? Well, how about this? We could provide food for 18 million hungry children in the United States each year. We could provide housing for 1.5 million homeless children who get out of school and have no home to go to. We could de-ghettoize an entire city where the people living there are given meaningful jobs, good housing, good schools, safe neighborhoods, and allow the community to regulate itself at a much higher standard. That's what $5 billion. So is it better to give it to Israel that will continue doing what they're doing? Oh, did I forget about what was it Israel did that really got everyone angry, but except the New York Times and CNN and Anderson Cooper? None of these people raised this question at all. What was it called? What was it called? Was it called StockX? What was the name of it? Well, I'll tell you the name of it. And I'll tell you why you should be very concerned about what the media is not telling you about what Israel and the Mossad did that could have caused the next war in the Middle East with Iran. So we have a lot to share. Good study out of Albert Einstein Brain Research Institute. They found that melatonin, that's what your brain normally secretes and creates when you're asleep. If you get a good, deep, rapid sleep, you get enough melatonin to help your immune system and protect your brain. But most people wake up during the night. There's either noise or there's light or they've eaten something which has caused their body to go anabolic instead of catabolic. And as a result, they don't sleep. Hence, they don't, not deeply, they don't create enough melatonin. So if you took a supplement, 3 milligrams, that's not a lot, quote, you could help mitigate migraines as effectively as one of those common drugs to use it. So melatonin is safe. This was a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial that showed that just 3 milligrams of melatonin was more effective than a placebo and had efficacy similar to 25 milligrams of the most common migraine pain medication. So that's important. So melatonin for migraines. Also, flaxseed oil, not the flaxseed. If you eat flaxseed, I can assure you 90, 95% is going to come right out of you because it's too tight, too strong to really be broken down, and the transit time is very fast, so you want the oil. Well, for those of you who have carpal tunnel syndrome, which almost always is accompanied by pain and numbness and reduced mobility in the hands and wrists, this was published in the University of Medical Science in the Daryu Journal of Pharmaceutical Sciences. They determined that the application of external linseed oil, also referred to as flaxseed oil, can reduce pain and increase mobility for syndrome sufferers. So this was good. This was a placebo oil that did not work, and it was the flaxseed oil that did work. So that will help carpal tunnel syndromes. Now we have something that, if you've been watching some of the infomercials and some of the PBS programs, you saw a doctor on there talking about how you don't want grains in the diet. And I know the doctor, and in point of fact, I've had many conversations with him, and he and I have had this discussion where I said, unless the public really understands the enormous difference between processed or refined grains like white rice and white flour and white sugar versus if a person were to have brown rice and quinoa and amaranth, and it's an enormous difference. Rye, whole buckwheat, which is actually in the rhubarb family. I said, that gives you fiber, it gives you polyphenols, it gives you phytonutrients that are all good. It gives you antioxidants. Doesn't raise your blood sugar, is very good on the glycemic index. Anyhow, he's on to the more high-protein diet. This is the latest study. Quote, swapping animal for plant protein in your diet can lead to a longer life. A large study found that every 3% increase in calories from plant protein reduced the risk of death from all causes by 10%. It was also associated with a 12% lower risk of death from heart disease. In contrast, raising the animal protein share of calories by 10% led to a 2% higher risk of all causes of death and an 8% greater chance of dying from a heart problem. So let's see that we're really clear here. Animal protein means all meat, all fish, all eggs, all dairy products, all cheeses. So when you eat these, when you eat meat, fish, eggs, dairy products, and cheeses and milk, you're going to die sooner, including from heart disease and all other causes. But if you have a plant-based diet of cereal, beans, nuts, legumes, soy, and whole grain breads, then you're going to live a longer life and have far less chance of dying from heart disease. Quote from this study, this was done at the Massachusetts General Hospital. Overall, our findings support the importance of the sources of dietary protein for long-term health outcomes. While previous studies have primarily focused on overall amount of protein intake, which is important from a broad dietary perspective, the particular foods that people consume to get protein are equally important. Our findings suggest people should consider eating more plant proteins than animal proteins. Well, that's good. So for all of the people out there who are shifting over, including our health support group, to a plant-based diet, wow, you're on the right side of health, the right side of hygiene, the right side of animal rights, the right side of reducing methane, the right side of healthy heart, healthy intestines, healthy colon, healthy liver, healthy brain. So you're doing the right thing. And from Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, quote, a greater intake of nuts, especially in place of animal proteins, could reduce inflammation, a key process in the development of cardiovascular disorder. That's what the study found. They're suggesting 5 or more servings of nuts per week, and just take a little handful of nuts each day. You can change the different nuts, but that makes all the difference in the world, and it lowers the C-reactive protein, which lowers your risk of inflammation of the heart, which lowers your risk of diabetes and heart attacks. So it's a biggie, and that's important. Quote, our study supports an overall healthful role for nuts in the diet and suggests reducing inflammation as a potential mechanism may help explain the benefits of nuts on cardiovascular disease. And that was from Dr. Bayo, the epidemiologist in Brigham Women's Hospital. So we're happy about that. So get walnuts. Walnuts is probably your number one nut, but right behind that would be macadamia. And then almonds and pine nuts. All good. And finally, from McMaster's University, they found that the more exercise you do, the longer you're going to have active muscles. The greater the muscle repair, and that's important. But people don't exercise as they get older, and as a result, you're more likely to have muscle injury and loss of muscle mass. And that causes weakness, and that changes your hormone levels, especially human growth hormone. And you begin to get that creepy skin and weak muscles, so you can reverse that, but you can't do it without exercise. So get your exercise. That's important. Now, from CMD, quote, AARP, the nonprofit seniors organization that exists to promote the financial security, pensions, and health care of those over 50, is secretly funding the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, an organization whose bills have acted against the interest of ordinary Americans, including retirees and their families. The Center for Media and Democracy has learned that AARP has recently joined ALEC and that it's named as a sponsor of the ALEC annual meeting that took place this year in Indianapolis the last several days. And that's not good. Why? Because for over 25 years, ALEC has been proposing and writing bills that become law, meeting with your legislators in secret, coaching them on how to pass these laws. They go back into the state legislatures, they pass the laws, almost always to the betterment of one of their member, 200 or 300 member corporations, and always against our interest. So that's important. Remember, ALEC would love to privatize Social Security and all this hyperbole that, you know, they're going to become insolvent, and it's not true. So if you're a member of the AARP, I would resign and let them know why. You're protesting. They're having anything in the world to do with ALEC. The only thing that should happen to ALEC, it should be put out of business. We should ban it because it's not doing anything on our behalf. And this comes from our environmental segment today. This is from Bloomberg. Quote, evidence shows that the sky is coming down on our heads, the watery part of it, anyway, in larger and larger cascades. It's largely our own fault. The past 2 months have seen some doozies just in the United States. The Empire State Building was struck by lightning twice on Monday this week during a storm that brought an inch of rain down in what felt like a single sheet. Last month, at least 23 people died in West Virginia flooding. At its peak, June 23rd, more than 8 inches to 10 inches fell within half a day, a once-every-thousand-year rainstorm. And these storms in May and early June dropped 5 times as much rain as normal near Houston, seriously challenging the definition of normal. More than a dozen people died. It was the city's 5th major flood in just over a year. The most dramatic recent image came from Bruce Hafner, a Phoenix TV helicopter pilot who snapped what looked like a 20-megaton warhead going off. This is informally known as a rain bomb. The phenomenon is known in meteorological circles as the more sober wet microburst. They are supposed to rarely happen. Conditions must be just right. A thunderstorm runs into a dry patch of air that sucks some moisture away. The air beneath the storm clouds cools, making it more dense than the air around it. The cooler air begins to drop even more warmer air, then accelerates. And when the faucet really flips on, air can blast out of the sky at more than 115 miles an hour. It deflects off the ground and pushes winds outward at a near tornado strength. The Phoenix event was actually a macro burst with a radar footprint wider than 2.5 miles. And in fact, I just saw on YouTube that in Santa Fe, just this weekend, they had a major hailstorm where there was like 3 inches of hail on one roof alone, a flat roof. And these were huge hailstones. If you were outside, you could be killed. You have that happening in the beginning of August? Unheard of. But that's the new norm. So what's actually happening to our environment? Let me give you the quick overview. Right now, we have probably, I'm guesstimating, last year was about 115,000 to 120,000 unique weather happenings, meaning the hottest, the coldest, the wettest, the driest, all kinds of extremes all over the world. The worst fires in Siberia's history, Russia's history, and the most fires in Texas, the most fires in California. It's gotten so common that we don't even frequently get reported on these events. The most earthquakes in Oklahoma, I think over 3,000 earthquakes in Oklahoma. One state, that many, all because of gas hydrofracking. So we are beginning to make the mistake of adapting our attitude to, okay, so it is an extreme event. As long as it's not impacting me, why do I care? You should. Because when it gets as hot as it's gotten in the last couple of weeks in certain parts of the world, all the seeds and seedlings die. Then when you get flooding, massive flooding, as you're getting in many parts of the world, including China today, that means everything that was planted is washed out or so contaminated you couldn't consume it safely. We're dealing with hundreds of millions of people who are now unable to secure food locally by their own means and hands because of extreme weather. It's going to get worse. It's getting hotter. The Arctic ice would bounce the light from the sun back into the atmosphere. Now as it melts, that ice no longer reflects it. It goes right into the water, heats up the bottom of the Arctic, which is shallow, and then that creates methane. Not good. They actually had an anthrax outbreak in Siberia when some carcasses from long ago frozen in the tundra, I think it was elk, were decomposing, and now they're no longer frozen. So when you start melting all of that kind of peat, and some of that peat can go down 30 to 50 feet, that catches on fire. There's no way in the world to put it out. And that gives you an idea, that area of forest in Russia is larger than the entire landmass of the United States. You could drop the United States into that area. We're talking about an awful lot of land that could be on fire, which again would overheat the environment, pollute the environment. So we're in these loops, these feedback loops, and they're only going to get worse. So I'm asking this audience, please pay attention to the environment. Because if you don't, you're going to be like the people down in Key Largo and other places in the Keys who spend a lot of money on a house because there's a market out there and a real estate broker willing to sell you anything without any conscious that they're frequently either unaware or intentionally just trying to make a sale. You buy it, and then one day there's no rain. You've got 18 inches of water in your driveway, and you say, where'd this come from? Man, it smells. Look at the mosquitoes. There was no storm. That was just the new surge of the tide. That's the oceans rising. Well, gee whiz, why didn't anyone tell me? Why didn't you do your homework? You trusted a broker? Boy, that's a mistake. I was like trusting aluminum siding salesman. Better get your car salesman. Better get all your facts, because you never know which one of those people are telling you the truth or not. But living on the coast now, not a good idea. You should be looking at where climate change is most likely to cause problems. We're talking about Nevada, South Dakota. We're talking about Colorado, Kansas, Indiana, Alabama, Georgia, most of Florida, 80% of Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico, Arizona, and 80% of California. Those are not sustainable for the future, and they're never coming back, ever, not in anyone's lifetime. Now, that does not mean that they're going to be all deserts. It means that they are now deserts to which people have created oases that, depending upon their resources and the dwindling resource of water that they have, they'll be able to still sustain an existence for a certain amount of people there, but not like it's past. So just be aware. You better know where you're investing. You better know where you're living. And I suggest no one buy anything now. In fact, I suggest people get cash, hold it, gold and silver, hold it, because we're in for a rough ride in the next 5 years. We're going to listen to a segment now by Joe Tyndall called Human Extinction by 2030. And there's several other people, leading people, saying the same thing. It's not just one or two people who are experts in this area. Please listen in.
Deniers believe global warming is a hoax. It's the liberals complaining. Business as usual is just fine. The Al Gore crowd sees climate change as real. Humans are the cause. But it's not that urgent. Minor tweaks to the marketplace can fix this. Group 3 says markets cannot fix the problem. Positive feedback will rapidly transform our planet. The consequences will be severe. 3 incompatible views. How did we get here? In the 1960s, the men and women who ended fascism on two continents during World War II reached middle age. They looked around to find people being beaten in the streets, severe environmental degradation, and kids coming home from foreign wars in body bags. In response, they elected a Congress that passed a huge amount of progressive legislation. Many of these new laws reduced the rate at which rich people could get richer. To counter these setbacks, on August 23, 1971, Lewis Powell wrote a memo in which he urged businessmen to pool a lot of money and change the attitudes and beliefs of Americans. Every year since then, billions have flowed to think tanks to create pro-corporate mythology and to purchase media to spread these ideas. As part of this effort, Big Energy has invested less than a penny per dollar of profit to move folks from Group 3, to the Al Gore crowd, to the deniers. As a result, every effort to cut greenhouse gas emissions has been stalemated, and roughly half of all Americans believe global warming is a fraud. Is climate change real? How can we know? From antibiotics to skyscrapers, planes to DVDs, computers to plastics, science has delivered all the technologic wonders we take for granted today. So what does science tell us? In 1978, we launched a satellite. Part of its mission was to measure Arctic ice. This is 35 years of daily ice sheet volume measurements in thousands of cubic kilometers. How do you measure ice volume from orbit? Ice is less dense than water. When floating, part of it sits above water. The satellite sends out a pulse and measures the time until the reflection returns. Because it knows its altitude precisely, it can determine the height of the ice and thus thickness. To make trends easy to see, only yearly maximum, average, and minimum volume are shown here. Extending the minimum curve, we find an ice-free Arctic for a few days as early as September 2016. We also have 35 years of Arctic ice area data. We can divide volume by area to obtain average thickness. The red line is 3 feet. Thickness is declining 4 times faster than area. Area will remain high until thickness drops to zero and the entire ice sheet suddenly disappears. Looking at volume trends, Arctic ice will be gone for a few September days no later than 2020. Following the maximum trend curve, the Arctic will be ice-free permanently in 2032. However, with additional positive feedback taking hold, the Arctic could be ice-free as early as 2025. Positive feedback is a situation where the output of a system also acts as an input, such that a change in the output causes the output to change further and faster in the direction it was going. More than 30 positive feedback mechanisms documented in the scientific literature are starting to speed up climate change. This is commercial shipping today in the Arctic. Where are we in relation to the tipping point? August 1958, the USS Nautilus finds average ice thickness to be 3.08 meters, 10.1 feet. When the Queenfish retraced this journey in 1970, it found thickness had declined to 2.39 meters, 7.8 feet. Were 1958 and 1970 above or below average thickness years? This is the satellite data for the month of August with its trend curve. Maximum deviation from trend is 0.274 meters. We can add and subtract this from the submarine data to obtain a likely range for the satellite data. The upper edge of this gray area slopes downward. This means during the 1960s, when carbon dioxide was only 320 parts per million, the Arctic ice sheet was quietly but relentlessly melting away. For the past few million years, we have bounced between ice ages and interglacial periods. Like it or not, we are already on our way to a hotter temperature state. How does one obtain temperature from thousands or millions of years ago to produce this history? Note the delta oxygen 18 reference at the right-hand edge. Oxygen has three stable isotopes. Oxygen 16 has 8 protons and 8 neutrons for an atomic weight of 16. Oxygen 18 has 10 neutrons, giving it an atomic weight of 18. Being heavier, an oxygen 18 water molecule is less likely to evaporate than an oxygen 16 molecule. However, the ratio of oxygen 18 to oxygen 16 evaporated increases with temperature. When oceans are warmer, more oxygen 18 water evaporates. Ice cores and other land sediments have a higher oxygen 18 concentration. When more oxygen 18 evaporates, calcium carbonate shells from marine creatures falling to the ocean floor contain less oxygen 18. When temperature is lower, less oxygen 18 evaporates. Land-based sediments contain less oxygen 18, while marine sediments contain more. At the start of the Industrial Revolution, CO2 was 280 parts per million. Since 1800, excess CO2 in the air has doubled every 32 years. The zigzag is Keeling's CO2 measurements at Mauna Loa. Today, CO2 is at 400 parts per million, a 120 part per million excess over 280, and three times the 1960s 40 ppm surplus. If business as usual continues, we will hit 520 ppm by 2046 and 760 ppm by 2078. Climate change activists say we must bring CO2 back down to 350 parts per million by 2050 at the latest. If 320 parts per million was enough to melt the Arctic, how will getting back to 350 parts per million do anything, especially if the Arctic ice sheet no longer reflects sunlight during summer months? We are past the tipping point. Why are so few Americans aware of this? Why do so few care? The answer is the success of the Powell letter-induced disinformation campaign. When the Arctic ice sheet is gone, climate change will shift from gradual to rapid. The fifth IPCC report places the heating imbalance at 2.29 watts per square meter. Multiplying this times the area of the Earth gives a total heating imbalance of 1.17 petawatts. The Earth receives 174 petawatts of power from the Sun. Currently, it radiates only 173 petawatts back into space. This roughly 1 petawatt difference is heating our planet. When the Arctic transforms from reflecting sunlight to an open water solar collector, another petawatt of heating imbalance will be added. What are the consequences? Greenland's ice will raise sea level 23 feet. A petawatt of heat dumped into the Arctic is enough to melt this ice in 25 years. In the last ice age, sea level dropped 400 feet. In a hotter state, where Antarctica also melts, and with thermal expansion, sea level will rise 300 feet. The areas in blue show dry land during an ice age. Areas in red are underwater in a hotter state. As the last ice age ended, it took roughly 8,000 years for the ice to melt to its present level. The remaining ice will melt in under 1,000 years. The climate system that carries rainwater over the continents is driven by the 80 degree Fahrenheit difference between the equator and the North Pole. When the Arctic is ice-free year-round, this difference drops to 45 degrees. The strength of the winds will decline, producing less rainwater and a permanent mega-drought. Estimates of human population by the end of this century place our numbers well below 1 billion. The Powell Letter campaign for corporate dominance has concentrated power in America. This shows the wealth required to be person 400 on the Forbes list of the 400 wealthiest Americans divided by median household income. Over 32 years, the purchasing power of median household income has stagnated, while rich people have seen their purchasing power triple. In the 1980s or 90s, we could have climbed back up the cliff. Because rich people did not yet have enough money, paradise will transform to desert. The book covers far more material and in far greater detail. I need your assistance to deliver it into the marketplace of ideas. Thank you.
And we should.
If this
we
video has been helpful,
we
please
should
click
help.
Thumbs up.
We should help get this message out. We are way past the idea that we can just do one or two things and have a meaningful outcome. As you heard him say, 90% of the world's population, or approximately 90%, are going to die. And you start listening to the people who are really honest and not conservative on this, and they say it's in the next 14 years. Time enough, more than time enough, for people individually and in groups to begin to stop talking about it and do it. What can you do immediately? You can go vegan. That will make a difference. You begin to look at where are the places most likely where you could live and live sustainably and healthy and be in a progressive environment. That's not difficult. I wrote an article on it. It's free. It's up on our website, progressiveradionetwork.com, about sustainable places to live. It's over 60 pages. It took years worth of research to write it. It's there for you as my gift to help you better understand this. You also can start to do things like don't buy what you don't need. If you don't need it, stop purchasing. All right, just stop. And stop all the extras that we buy. We don't need 10 of everything, 10 dresses, 10 suits. We don't need all this. We have not realized how we've been conditioned to become consumers, not for something that benefits us, but more for something that benefits others. So that's what I'm asking you. Simple things. Don't buy what you don't need. Learn the places you should be living. Start to make a reasoned and responsible, not an overnight, but a legitimate transition to where you need to be. Become aware of the issues. Here's something for you to think about, and that is the National Security Agency, the Defense Department, and the White House, including Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton, both knew about this, and Obama, they wanted to slow down any potential for Iran to have nuclear weapons. The trouble is that the International Atomic Energy Agency had been regularly visiting every single one of the Iranian nuclear centrifuge operations. They had cameras in every single inch of it. They had alarm systems that would immediately, when touched, trigger back so that they could see who was messing with what. And they found no evidence whatsoever that they were trying to make the bomb. They simply wanted to have their own nuclear power, as we do and everyone else does, for running their nuclear power plants. Even though I'm against nuclear power plants, they signed up and were a member. Ironic that Israel has nuclear and nuclear bombs and is not a member. In any case, what they did was this. They began to get inside, and there was a celebration about how many centrifuges they had, but the centrifuges were not able to be powerful enough to create the type of uranium necessary to create the bomb, but enough to create nuclear energy in time. And so there was a video taken where the president of Iran was showing the scientists and how they were working. Little did he know that the Mossad in Israel and the National Security Agency would then freeze frame each of those scientists who were being congratulated. And those guys were all assassinated as if it didn't matter, right? Didn't make a big, this nuclear scientist assassinated, that one blown up in a car. And clearly these people did it. Then they began to put the most sophisticated piece of malware ever in their system. It infected their computer system. This was so smartly done that the malware, in effect, created a complete deniability of cause or source. So it went into the system not meant to send any messages back, but rather to have a mind of its own. That's how smart it was. And it would virtually go unnoticed. So what they would do is the Iranians be sitting watching their monitors, and everything was normal, but suddenly one of these centrifuges would explode, it would start to vibrate. It would overheat, and then they would have to stop everything, and they couldn't figure out what was wrong because all their monitors said it was normal. That's how good this was. So they were blowing up, or causing to be blown up, these centrifuges, and they were blowing up 10, 15, 20 of them and slowing the whole process down. These bots, these zombie network, really good. Remember, a malware is a malicious software. It's worse than a computer virus or worm or spyware or Trojan malware because this was the most sophisticated ever done. So anyhow, in time, the Iranians finally, with the help of some American scientists, because no one knew where this would go. Would this be on any American technology? And they started looking at it, and they spent a lot of hours. And these are the two people who are the best in America at finding out what's really wrong with your computer system. And they found it out. And so the word got out. And then the Iranians found out, and then the Russians found out, and the Chinese found out. So everybody found out. So then Iran and Russia and China started a massive Marshall Plan of getting every geek, every really smart computer guy to see that this can't happen again. What they didn't know, what no one knew, that wasn't really the nature of this project. The nature of the project was what Israel did on its own, secretly, that it didn't tell the National Security Agency or Defense Department. It actually had a different system in there. And the different system was that they wanted to be able to shut down all the power in Iran at once. And that meant that they could then attack Iran because, let's say, right now, if they were to attack Iran, the missile system would be alerted, the satellite system would see the bombers coming, the Iranians would have a certain amount of time to prepare. But with this malware, all computers in the entire country, all electricity in the country, every traffic light, every piece of equipment in a hospital, heart-lung machines, everyone's computers, cell phone, everything would die. Every refrigerator, freezer, everything would go off. By the way, this is at a time when this was discovered, when Iran was having the hottest days in the history of civilization, 167 degrees. Imagine that without air conditioning. In any case, it was discovered. Now, why would you want to turn off all the electricity? Because then the one place in Iran that was being bombed wouldn't be able to notify another place. There'd be no communications possible with anyone. You're talking about a country of 83 million people. You're talking about a country three times the size of Iraq. So if you're going to attack them, you're going to have to destroy everything that would give them a capacity to fight back. And that, I guess, was the intent. But think of what that would have meant. Think of how many people, innocent civilians, in Iran would die. Millions would be dead. And so that is what Israel did. Now, why is it that the New York Times or CNN didn't challenge them on that? What were the long-term consequences? Well, what do you think would be the consequences? Russia and Iran and China immediately saw the gee whiz, there's no need for a conventional war or no need for a nuclear war when we can turn off with cyber war your entire electric grid. Everything that works through electronics, gone. Not only that, but we can corrupt it. So you can't turn it back on. You can't reboot it. You'll have a completely corrupted system. Well, you can't fly an airplane. You can't navigate a boat. You can't run a hospital. Think of all the harm that would cause. Oh, and that would also turn off all the power to the nuclear facilities, which means that within 30 days, with no backup power, except what's in a generator from 1 week to 4 weeks, every one of our nuclear facilities would go Fukushima, which would probably kill in the neighborhood of half the entire American population within 3 months from radiation poisoning and virtually destroy our entire country without ever firing a shot. And no one held them accountable. No discussion at all, no debate, anywhere. That's how much power Israel has. And now Israel's saying, Netanyahu, we won $5 billion a year for military. And I'm saying, why give them 5 cents? Why not put that $5 billion back to Americans who deserve it and can benefit from it to give it back to our own citizens? That's one thing I'd like for you to call in and share your point of view on. Now we're back to bombing Libya again. According to Trevor Tim in The Guardian, quote, just 5 years after bombing Libya to dispose of Muammar Gaddafi, the U.S. is now officially bombing the country again, this time against alleged ISIS terrorist strongholds that cropped up in the power vacuum created by the last bombing. It's yet another episode of the war on terror circle of life, where the U.S. bombs a country and then funnels weapons into the region, which leads to chaos and the opportunity for terrorist organizations, which then leads to more U.S. bombing. Like usual in the Obama administration's wars, there was no congressional vote on the latest airstrikes in Libya, no declaration of war, as required by the Constitution. The administration is pinning the legal authority on its military incursion on the 2001 Authorization for Military Force Act. Okay, what did the Russians and the Syrian armed forces find when they liberated Mosul? Oh yeah, all those American weapons. So ISIS has been fighting Syrians, been fighting Russians, been fighting Iranians, been fighting other groups, and fighting Americans with American-made weapons. Thank you, John McCain, and all the others who thought it would be a great idea to regime change there. Your thoughts. Remember, put this in context. Just 5 years ago, Libya was the most solid, progressive, open, educated, healthiest, longest-lived, prosperous country in Africa. And that's saying something. With the greatest public works project, the great aquifer that was to the great irrigation system, every single citizen could vote and have an input on every single piece of legislation every single day of the year, and frequently overrode Gaddafi. They were prosperous. And now they are breeding ground for terrorism, and we killed over 22,000 innocent people, destroyed the top country in Africa. And now we're just doing more of the same. And also from Professor Lawrence Whitner from Global Research, the $1 trillion nuclear weapons question. The media have neglected to ask presidential candidates, why would you spend $1 trillion on weapons knowing that that would only further encourage other countries to develop nuclear weapons? We're supposed to be getting rid of nuclear weapons, not spending $1 trillion. And what does it say when we say yes to private industries, all politically and economically affiliated with legislators and members of the military industrial complex, and we say no to the average worker, no to children, no to people who can't afford to pay their mortgage, no to schools that are bureaucratized, their massive bureaucracies of ineptitude, where the student doesn't have a good environment or good curriculum to learn, where we have people who are dying because they are too poor to get the medications they need, and yet we have $1 trillion for that. And also, this is about Bill Clinton. It's short from Press TV, quote, the U.S. crime bill that former President Bill Clinton approved while in office led to a surge in the imprisonment of black people during the 1990s and subsequent years. The Clinton administration signed the Ominous Crime Bill Act in the mid-1990s, which was very instrumental in the incarceration and judicial supervision of hundreds of thousands, by the way, it's now over 2 million, African Americans. Also, there was the signing of the Effective Death Penalty Act under the Clinton administration, which limited the ability of death row inmates to appeal their cases, so more people on death row died, even if they were innocent. Quote, we have to look at the demographics of who's actually on death row, and it's 90% African Americans. In addition to that, the former president spent more than 10 minutes facing down protesters who reminded him that what he did caused a surge in imprisonment of black people. And he also was behind the Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act 1994, the largest crime bill in the history of the United States. The bill consists of 356 pages, providing 100,000 new police officers, $9.7 billion in funding for prisons, and $6.1 billion in funding of preventative programs, all privatized. And that was signed in law by Bill Clinton. And there's Hillary Clinton defending all this in 1994. So put it this way. I did the math on this, and I estimate that approximately 28 million African Americans, Latinos, have suffered because the Clintons, and that is in making simple things that should never have been crimes, like marijuana possession crimes. Your thoughts on TalkBack, call us, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'd like to get your feedback on that. Here's the latest from Brandon Turville of Global Research. This is about Hillary Clinton. Did you know that she sat on the board of Walmart? Did you know that she was on the board of Walmart for 6 years? Did you know that they created a special seat for her? It was not a regular board of directors. They never replaced her seat when she left. It was created by the Walton family, the wealthiest family in America. Did you know that when she was on that board, she was pro-union busting? She did everything she could to stop the unionization of workers, to stop them from earning a living wage, to stop them from having the rights to sue. Did you know any of that? Well, just remember, the next time you hear Hillary Clinton or Bill Clinton say what they, you know, how they feel your pain, no, they don't. How they're for unions, even though the heads of those unions are lining up to support her, she is anti-union, has been her entire career. And by the way, last night I learned some things I didn't know about the Clintons, that he was sued on a RICO action, went clear up to the Supreme Court, and he lost on a provision of that action. And he lost as Attorney General in Arkansas for racial discrimination. That's Bill Clinton specifically and personally. And that was upheld. Why don't we know about that? Why don't we know about how many times he cursed out blacks using the N-word? Why don't we know about her? You see, all we know is a perfectly manicured and groomed image, all illusion about them. And that's unfortunate. Things to think about. I will take your calls on these issues on our next program, where I'm going to go into depth on making debtors' prisons the new profit centers in America. So if you're poor, they're now trying to criminalize being poor. And that's unfortunate. Matt DeBibi wrote an article called Jailed for Being Broke. Yep. And I've got about six other major articles to explore on this issue. We should repeal all this. But just keep in mind, when Hillary Clinton likely becomes president, everything you could ever imagine being wrong will be wrong. She's a climate denier. She's a warmonger. And she is not for you. Look at where she's made her money and her husband. Those are not normal people. They're the 1/100th of 1%. They're now worth over $200 million. That puts them in that rarefied air. And look who gave them that money. That's who they're going to support. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you for listening. Have a nice day.
Brother, brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer.
love.